welcome to another episode of Culture in Conflict. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. This is going to be one of many movie insight episodes that I'm going to be recording. I started watching the original Lord of the Rings movies again about a week or so ago. And watching any cinematic masterpiece as an adult versus when you're younger, you start to pick up different things. You may notice a scene that stands out now that didn't when you were younger. You may realize a theme or two that you never imagined was actually prevalent in a movie. So today, I want to talk a little bit about the Lord of the Rings saga. One of the themes that is very prevalent behind it, which is addiction. And I want to wrap up with talking a little bit about how we can help those that are struggling with addiction and what to do if you're the one struggling with addiction. So, you know, I'm going to recap the movie, touch on the addiction theme element that is very, very prevalent. And yeah, we're going to learn something today together, as we always do. So let me start from the beginning. Lord of the Rings came out when I was a teenager. I was about 14 years old. And at this time, I remember I had just obtained a PlayStation 2. Now, PlayStation was pretty much and still is one of the best consoles out there. And I decided to pick up this movie that I hadn't seen in a theater, but seemed pretty cool. And I've always been a fan of the kind of medieval times fantasy genre. So I said, you know what? Let me pick this up. Looks pretty awesome. And I took Lord of the Rings home that day. And it took me about 2 days to watch it. But I remember the feeling I had while watching that movie. I mean, I felt like I was there with these characters traveling through this fictional place called Middle Earth. And it was just great. You know, the battle scenes were very intriguing. The relationship that everybody had and that was growing. And it was just amazing. So without further ado, this is going to be a spoiler alert for those of you that haven't seen Lord of the Rings. I mean, it's been out for over 20 years, so hopefully you have seen it. And if you haven't, I'd pause here and go watch it and then come back. So in the beginning of the movie, it starts out with a narration about these ancient rings that were created for the main races of Middle Earth, that being the men, the elves, and dwarves. And as I understand it, these rings were created as, I guess, weapons to protect their people from danger. They don't really stipulate why these rings were created, but they all have some element of power. And I'm using air quotes when I say that. But anyway, as it begins, these rings were created for these different races to protect their people from whatever evils may be out there. And then you find out that there was another ring created in secret by a gentleman who is the main antagonist of the series, by the name of Sauron. Now, Sauron, his goal was to dominate and control Middle Earth, right? So what he goes ahead and does is pours all his hate, malice, and his will to control and dominate into this one ring. And the narrator makes it very clear that this is the one ring to rule them all. When rule them all, meaning the world, or this place called Middle Earth. So he sets out to take over the world. And it was through a last alliance of men and elves that marched on his place of dwelling place, I guess you'd call it, Mordor, and decided to try to stop him. Now, the battle scenes in this movie, epic. I mean, these, I'd even say the CGI holds up very well today, And I'll even go as far as to say that the computer graphics from back then in this movie rival a lot of the cinematic masterpieces that come out today. So I still enjoy it as an older person. So as they're marching on this area, you know, the armies are clashing. It's, you know, Sauron's orcs and goblins versus this alliance of men and elves and whoever else is there. And it's epic. It's beautiful. And right as they're about to win, from what the narrator's telling us and from what you can see on the screen, Sauron shows up. Now, Sauron, the way he looks, he's this very imposing figure. He has armor on. You don't see a face. I mean, he looks kind of like an armored demon or something like that. And he's wielding a big mace. And you can see the ring on his hand. And he's taking out soldiers by the dozen. I mean, one swing of that mace is like 15 soldiers just dead, right? So the king, the king of Gondor at this time, he decides, you know what, I'm going to rush in and take a swing at this guy, take him down. I mean, he's destroying our troops, and he gets taken out. His son rushes to his father's side, the king's side, who's just got knocked out, and, you know, he's dead, unfortunately. He's grieving, and right at that grieving moment, Sauron's about to take him out, too. The son, whose name is Isildur, goes to pick up his father's sword, and Sauron steps on it, shatters it, like literally shatters it like plastic, and this is a steel sword. And as he's about to pretty much grab Isildur, what I presume is by the neck to, you know, choke him out, crush his throat or whatever, Isildur takes what's left of the sword and chops the ring off his finger. Sauron's form basically blows up, and the shockwave knocks everybody back. And then Isildur picks up that ring in that moment. Now, we don't know what happens after Isildur cuts the ring from Sauron's hand, which actually causes Sauron to explode. We don't know what happens from the point Isildur picks up the ring, like right after that battle. We find it out later in the movie. But basically, Isildur picks up the ring, and instead of, you know, trying to destroy it, he takes it. And the narrator continues to say that, you know, the ring doesn't bring anybody good fortune, just more death and destruction. So later we see Isildur killed, and then the ring is lost again, forgotten about through time. And then somebody else picks it up. Somebody by the name of Gollum. Now, Gollum has a backstory as well. And we find that out, if I'm not mistaken, in the third movie, but it could be the second. But anyway, Gollum is corrupted by the ring, and it gives him a natural long life and drives him from his home and to the point where he's just living in the mountains for what I presume is centuries. And during that time of having the ring, it changes him physically, it changes him mentally, and he is, I'd say, barely a shell of the former person he once was. I mean, this ring is terrible. So, after Gollum has a ring, a character that we're going to become very familiar with, not so much in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but more in the Hobbit series, Bilbo comes upon the ring. And we see Bilbo get the ring, sort of as a, you know, it's still part of the prequel, and he takes it, he finds it, takes it from Gollum, doesn't actually take it from Gollum, the way it's explained here, I guess Gollum put the ring down, and Bilbo finds it, picks it up, and just takes it back home or whatever, but again, you know, you find out more during the Hobbit series, which comes out after the Lord of the Rings series, and then that's it. That's pretty much it for the prologue. I mean, he has it, and then we fast forward to the narrator saying, you know, some things should have never been forgotten about. So we come upon our main protagonist, Frodo, full name Frodo Baggins. And I had to do a little research on this, but Frodo and Bilbo are actually related. And I if I'm not misremembering, they're actually distant cousins. Yeah, that's what I read. They're distant cousins. Anyway, we see Frodo, and he's reading a book. He's hanging out in the forest in the Shire, next to the Shire. Shire is where the hobbits live, and hobbits are basically, they're short, very peaceful people with hairy feet, excuse me. That's right. Short, peaceful people with hairy feet. They don't wear shoes. So I think they have the strongest feet in Middle Earth in all of the Lord of the Rings series. But anyway, Frodo happens to be a hobbit. They're very short. I don't even think short's the right word. Maybe it is. Because, I mean, you know, they're called halflings. That's another name for the hobbit. So they're about the, I guess, the size of maybe like a 8 or 9 or 10 year old human child. They resemble, yeah, but and then they're fully grown. So anyway, Frodo's hanging out, reading a book, and then a gray bearded wizard shows up. And you know he's a wizard by the hat, by the name of Gandalf. Great guy, friend of the family. And just like with most of the characters, they all have a backstory, but we don't know right now. You know, we just know that Gandalf is coming to visit Frodo. I forget what the ceremony is about, but he brings, I forget the reason why, but he brings fireworks and things. You know, just a fun, he's a, you know, you just get the idea that he's a cool guy. He's a wizard and he does magical things, right? So during this visit, finds out about this ring that Bilbo has. And he does his own research and realizes that, oh my God, this is the ring of power that was chopped from Sauron's hand all those years ago. So a lot of things occur now. We meet some other characters. We meet Sam. We meet Merry and Peregrine Took. What's his name? Pippin. I think it's Pippin. So we meet Sam, Merry, and Pippin. Man, I'm not great with names. So anyway, they all venture out to basically set out and find out what they should do with the ring. Obviously, it can't stay in the Shire because it would bring nothing but death and destruction, even though at this time it's probably been there for the better of 60, 70 years, maybe longer. Because Bilbo's quite up in age, and he's had that ring for a while. And I know, you know, after you watch The Hobbit, you realize he obtained the ring when he was a young man. So we, you know, they set out to the original plan was for the hobbits to meet Gandalf at an inn, but I won't spoil the fun for those of you that have not seen the movie, but he gets delayed. We'll just say that. And we meet some other characters, and then they come to a place called Rivendell, where the home of the elves are, and they agree that they need to destroy it. Now, I'm going to pull up there, and because I've given a nice chunk of the story up to that point, I want to stop there for a second. So the rest of the movie and the subsequent movies center around the world, first and foremost, coming to grips that Sauron is going to make a move again, and we need to get our collective sugar, honey, iced tea together and fight him. Now, the other side of the story centers on Frodo traveling to Mordor, where the ring can only be destroyed by throwing it in the fires from which it was forged. So everybody that is on Sauron's team is looking for him and the ring. Now, here's where we get into the theme of addiction. That ring is slowly taking its toll on Frodo. It whispers to him. In fact, it whispers to anybody who holds it or possesses it, even for a little while. And it can drive you, or that person rather, mad or insane, you can say. To the point where they become obsessed with it. And throughout the three movies or the three parts, it it's just constantly weighing down on him. It's making him think, it makes him think that people are turning on him. It's sapping his health slowly, just like any addiction can potentially do. You know, it starts out at first, it could be, you know, with any addiction, it could start out as a good thing or not a thing at all. But the longer you meddle with that thing that is causing your addiction, it slowly eats away at you. Even in the, throughout the first movie, he tries to give the ring away several times. And he's refused by each and every individual, even the most powerful. For example, in the beginning of the first movie, he tries to give it to Gandalf. And he said, you know, if I could, I would take it from you. But through me, it would be a destructive force. And I would lay waste to all before me. So he didn't do it. He couldn't take it. He tried to give it to Galadriel. No, not the Galadriel for Rings of Power, the real Galadriel. And she even, you know, as wise and old as she was, she's an elf. She couldn't take it. And there's a pretty creepy scene that occurs on the why she couldn't take it. And then we fast forward to one of the fellowship, which it almost basically corrupts. And then he snaps out of it. That ring is a perfect example of anything that's addictive. I don't care what it is. Video games, sex, pornography. Too much of anything can be a bad thing. But I would say too much of a bad thing is just terrible. So as I'm watching this movie, and I'm on the second one right now, but as I'm thinking about all three, this ring is eating away at Frodo. It's eating away at his one of his closest friends, Sam. And we'll see that as well. You'll see that as well. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, but just think about it. For those that have, it actually could have driven a serious wedge between them. And I don't want to submit too many spoilers, but yeah. And it's just horrible. Now, think about actual addiction. If you're somebody that suffered from some type of addiction, if you've known people, it can really end some friendships. Very similar to what happened in this movie. And, you know, your true friends are going to be the ones that are going to, first and foremost, tell you, hey, look, there's a problem, number one. And then the second thing is, a true friend is going to say, let me get you some help or let me help you with it. And that's got to be one of the hardest things for anybody that's addicted to anything to do, to just sort of surrender and let go and understand there's something wrong and seek help. Frodo had all these individuals willing to help him. He literally had those that he probably would have never come across, unless he had this situation. And in the end, Frodo, he could have succumbed to that quote-unquote addiction of the ring, the overwhelming power that comes with it. And this is what happens in life. I've struggled with some things. And, you know, I'm blessed to have a wife and a couple and a few friends to talk to about those things. Just like in this movie, you know, I mean, obviously the movie's fictional, but just like that being one of the themes, you need friends. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, a person that has two or three or, you know, even one, two or three friends, close friends in their life, you're blessed. Point blank, period. And you know that if you ever go through anything like this, they're going to be there for you. And you're there for them. And I've known quite a few people in life that have struggled with some serious, serious addictive-like ailments. And it's no joke. It's work. I mean, smoking is an addiction. And you see these stories all the time where smoking could, destroy lives, change lives, destroy lives, and get sick. And subsequently pass away if you don't seek out help. I remember watching a story years ago about a young lady who was addicted to video games. I used to play video games a lot. I still play them every now and then. As a pastime. But I remember this young lady was in college and she was so addicted to video games, she wouldn't go to class. It's taking a toll on relationships. And, you know, I think it's important, and I probably should have done this earlier, but I'm doing it now. We have to define addiction. And I think the best way to define addiction is anything that you are compulsively compelled to do that interferes with your work, with your life, with relationships, and has negative effects on you as a person. And all of those other things, that I aforementioned. And, you know, I think that it's important to own up to our struggles, because the last thing you want to do is be consumed by that thing that is driving you to become quote unquote obsessed with it. And addiction is a hard thing to break. It really is. The body, or the brain rather, is a machine, and the brain is going to keep going back to that thing that is giving you the dopamine hit. So little thing about dopamine, I'm not a doctor or a scientist or anything like that, just know a little bit about a lot. But dopamine is the chemical that's released when you're doing something pleasurable. So eating, making love to someone, watching a cool movie, any of those things release certain levels of dopamine. Even those individuals that may be on drugs, you're getting that dopamine hit, and that's what they're actually addicted to. But that's the thing that is helping supply that dopamine is the actual cause of your addiction. But that's what happens. The brain is a machine. It remembers those things that bring it pleasure and wants it more and more and more and more. And it's important to control those impulses and urges. And we can do it, you know, with help and meditation and practice and things like that. But yeah, so, you know, just from the various stories that are out there, I know it's hard. I've had my own struggles, not with drugs or anything like that, but just in general. At one time I played video games too much. I mean, not to the extent as the lady in the documentary, but it was pretty bad. And it can be detrimental. It's important to get out, which is funny because as a younger person, growing up, I was outside all the time. But yeah, I just thought that was interesting. You know, watching Lord of the Rings again as an adult, that was one of the central themes of the movie. That is one of the central themes of the movie, the addiction theme. And I just want to conclude and say that if you're going through something, anything, doesn't matter what it is, if you think you have an addiction, talk to somebody. Talk to a friend, talk to your parents. You'd be surprised. And don't be ashamed. All right. Let me just say that. Never be ashamed of anything that you're going through. That thing that you're going through could be the very thing, whether it's addiction or whatever it may be. Well, you know, the topic is addiction for this one. That addictive situation that you're going through could be the very thing that elevates you to the next phase of your life. So don't be ashamed of it. Face it head on. Face it head on. Talk to your friends. Talk to your family. If you go to church, talk to your pastor. And if you feel comfortable, if you have a couple of colleagues at work that you can trust, talk to them. If they're people of integrity and honor, like you believe they are, they're going to help you. They're not going to ridicule you. They're not going to make fun of you or anything like that. They're going to help you. Just like Frodo was helped by these individuals as much as they could. Just saying you're there for them. Actually talk to them. Take them where they need to be to get help for that addiction. If you can't help them, sometimes they need a professional. Follow up with them. And encourage them and let them know that they can get through whatever it is that they're going through. I guarantee you, you'll feel great about it. And they'll thank and love you for it, because you could be the very person that saved them from that terrible, terrible experience of being addicted to whatever it is. You could have been the light. You could be the light that they needed to see to get over what they were going through. And they'll definitely appreciate it. And you'll feel proud of yourself. It's a two-way thing. You might have just saved that person's life. A lot of times in the news, we hear about individuals, and it doesn't necessarily have to be about addiction, but we hear about a lot of individuals who are going through situations and they never recover. They never recover. They're depressed for the rest of their lives, or they end up unfortunately taking their own lives. Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality. So I'll stop there. And I'll say this before I end. If you are that person going through something, talk to someone. If you know somebody that's going through something, talk to them. Get some help and be there for them. If you're going through it, know that there is a way out. I thank you all for listening, and I will see you guys on the next one.